Right. Thank you, everybody, for coming. You are now on the record. The purpose of this class in general.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you're on record.
No,
okay, that's fine. I don't record your excuses.
That's okay. As long as you don't go up to the Amud like that.
God forbid.
You are part of an initiative which in many ways is groundbreaking because very little attention is being paid now to Nusach HaTfilah. We'll define that in a moment. And actually, as time goes on, more awareness has been raised by Chazanim and by Baalei Tefillah of the need for lay people to be aware of what Nusach HaTfilah is and the importance of Nusach HaTfilah. The OU is actually beginning an initiative, they're rolling it out this summer, called the Nusach HaTfilah Initiative, and it's being headed up by my dear friend Chaim David Burson, who is the Chazan at the Jewish Center in Manhattan. And the idea is that they're running a number of seminars educating across the country, educating lay people and potential Baalei Tefillah about the importance of Nusach HaTfilah, and especially around the times of the holidays and so forth, giving kind of an understanding what that's about. They may be running a program here in Dallas as well. I also want to acknowledge the person whose efforts, at least in the United States, has been tireless and really at the forefront of popular awareness of educating people how to daven, and that is the great Chazan Sherwood Goffin, the Chazan Emeritus of the Lincoln Square Synagogue. He just retired after 50 plus years as the Chazan of Lincoln Square. He was the only Chazan ever in the history of the Lincoln Square Synagogue. He just retired, and he has a great deal of material about Nusach and about the importance of Nusach HaTfilah, and has really been instrumental in kind of, he's written many articles and making people aware, also in his role as, I think he's one of the deans of the Bell School at YU, along with Chazan Joseph Malavani of the Fifth Avenue Synagogue, making people aware, educating would-be Baalei Tefillah about Nusach HaTfilah. And finally, the other person who has done a great deal to raise popular awareness is Rabbi Haskell Lookstein. Now, Rabbi Lookstein of late has become famous for other things, but center of a few controversies. But one thing that is not in any way, or should not in any way be controversial about Rabbi Lookstein, is that no other rabbi has knowledge of, well, maybe a few other rabbis, but has been instrumental in raising awareness of Nusach as Rabbi Lookstein, and many recordings of his are available online for any would-be Baalei Tefillah. Please God, over time, I will also put up my own materials online, but you should know that in many ways, in this regard, I am a Talmud, I'm a student of Rabbi Lookstein, both in terms of the importance of making people aware of this and educating people, and also in terms of making the masses, as it were, accessible to everybody. This will all, of course, there is going to be a practical component, and as I see many of you here, I know that you're not just interested in the theory, you're interested in the practice of Nusach HaTfilah as well, and it is immensely gratifying that so many of you are here. We'll talk about how to apply many of these principles as we go on. But before we begin, I want to define what Nusach HaTfilah is. The simple translation, Nusach, that is a term that means several things. Nusach is a term that you hear, for example, Nusach Sfard, Nusach Ashkenaz, Nusach Edot HaMizrach. So one definition of Nusach is the text. Which version of the text do you use for your liturgy? So Nusach Ashkenaz is what people use, the version of the Siddur, I guess, that people use coming from Ashkenazic countries, Germany, France, those areas, that is parts of Hungary, that is really, that is that is where Nusach Ashkenaz comes from. We've got chairs. Lithuania, Litvak, Davin, absolutely Davin, Nusach Ashkenaz. Nusach Sfard is a misnomer. It does not really come from Spain. It is the Nusach that is used by members of the, it's more Kabbalistic based, used by members of the Hasidic community, people coming from Poland, from parts of White Russia, parts of Hungary and Romania. That is what we call Nusach Sfard. The people that we refer to as Sfardim, they have a separate, that's what's often known as Edot HaMizrach, people coming from the Arab countries, North Africa, the Babylonian Jews from Iraq. And then there are other communities that have their own Sidurim. Yekes, German Jews, have a Siddur of their own. They have their own versions of the text. The Vilna Gaon, followers of Vilna Gaon, there's a Nusach Hagra. Then their members of the Spanish and Portuguese community have their own Nusach, the Western Sephardic tradition. Yemenite Jews have theirs. The Italian Jews have their own Nusach as well, Nusach Italia. Anybody who's traveled to Italy and has gone to an Italian shul, they'll probably found themselves lost, because it is quite a bit different from a lot of the other texts that we have. And a lot of communities have in many ways their own Nusach. But aside from that, Nusach HaTfilah sounds like an exotic term. It actually, or perhaps a term used by angry, pedantic old men to describe when somebody is davening in a way they don't like, that they're committing a violation. So that's actually not strictly accurate. I think that despite the fact that I bemoan the lack of knowledge of Nusach HaTfilah, everybody has a little bit of a sense of what Nusach HaTfilah is about. So, for example, I'm going to sing a part of davening, and you're going to tell me what time of the year we sing that part of davening, and I'll start very easy. Lehedor vador nagidot lecha ulenetzach netzachim kedushascha naktish. Exactly, Yom Noraim. So that's now. If I start going, Yantav, that's a Shalosh Regalim, okay? And if, for example, I did, right, that's Shabbos, right? I didn't have to open my mouth for, so we understand, I'll give you another example. If I started going Shochena Moroim VeKadosh Shemo, right, that is the Shochena that opens up the chakras for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. But if I started going Shochena, okay, exactly. The point of Nusach HaTfilah is, and I could do this for a long time, but I'll spare you. The point of Nusach HaTfilah is that you could go into any shul, anywhere, at any time, and based on what the chazan is singing, you'll be able to tell what tefillah it is and what time of the year it is. That's the point of Nusach HaTfilah. Now, it's important to stress at the outset that we're talking about Ashkenazi Nusach. Okay? If you are Sephardi, then there is a whole set of what they call makamat, which is modes or scales that they use. They use different ones for different times of the year, different Shabbatot, and that is a whole complicated discipline. I have enormous respect for Sephardi Chazanim, because they need to know a lot, and also because they actually still have Chazanim. That's the difference.
Because they recite every single
right. There's a lot, and so we'll talk about that in a moment. That's a whole separate discussion, and I actually know very little about makamat. If you find your local friendly Sfardi and see it, and maybe they will enlighten you. So this is the idea. The idea of Nusach HaTfilah is that if a Baal Tefillah knows the melacha, knows the business, a good Baal Tefillah, and by which I mean a Baal Tefillah, because Baal Tefillah should be good. That's another important point. The Amud in a shul never, it has never been and should not ever be a democracy. It shouldn't be just open to anybody that wants to daven. It should be merit-based. People need to know what they're doing before they ascend to the umlut. And that's what this class is about. How do we know? How do you know what you're doing? So that's what we're going to talk about. How did Nusach HaTfilah come to be? And before we actually learn about what to do, we have to learn about how it came to be. In other words, how did it come to be that there is a Nusach, one Nusach for Yomim Noraim, and another Nusach for Shalosh Regalim, and a third Nusach for Shabbos, and that even on, and that, you know, that on Shabbos there are certain parts that go one way and certain parts that go the other way. How did that come to be? Nusach HaTfilah is one of the few areas that we have that is still in many ways Torah Sheba'al Peh. The oral tradition, much of the oral tradition has been committed to writing. But the tradition of Tfilah, not the halachos of Tfilah, but the modalities of Tfilah, the modes of Tfilah, that is still in many ways in the realm of tradition that is passed down from one generation to the next. There have been a lot of people that have committed the music to notation. But as far as how to do it right, a lot of that is still a matter of mesora, a matter of tradition. But the first person to really codify nuskaos was the Maharil, Rav Yaakov Molin. Rav Yaakov Molin lived from 1356 to 1427. He was the chief rabbi of the Rhineland. Now, at the time, the Rhineland was kind of a gathering place. The large communities in the Rhineland were places to which Jews fled from smaller communities throughout France and Germany, because the period during which the Maharil lived was the period during and in the aftermath of the Crusades. So Jews fled from smaller communities to the big cities. What were the big cities in the Rhineland?
Frankfurt?
No.
Frankfurt on Main?
Frankfurt. These are all very important Jewish communities. Mainz, Speyer, and Worms, Vermeisa. Those were the three.
The Schum cities.
Yes. There were another. And later on in Germany, there was another tri-city communities, the Altona, Hamburg, and Wandsbek, the Ahu communities. But at this time, during the time of the Maharil, these communities were the main communities, and he was really the chief rabbi. He was the chief rabbi of all these three cities. And he was the universally recognized authority at the Lahavdil. It's like being the chief rabbi of Dallas, Fort Worth, and Arlington. Like, that's the, just to give you, in terms of proximity and importance. No, Chas v'Shalom. He was the universally recognized authority at the time, and he used his authority to codify the various modes of prayer. What do we mean when we say modes of prayer? I mean that there are certain scales, certain musical motifs that come up throughout the davening, and he was the one who codified which ones go with which parts of davening, which ones are appropriate to use with which parts of davening, and we'll talk about how that came about soon. The different scales, the different keys that are appropriate for each prayer, the different themes that are appropriate for each prayer. This was what the Maharil did. There are, if you look throughout Ashkenazi prayer, there's over 100 at least modes of tefillah that you find throughout Ashkenazi tefillah. And the Maharil also, in addition to being a halachic authority, he was also a chazan in his own right. And he was especially concerned back in the day about the intrusion of foreign melodies into the prayer. Now, I don't know what these foreign melodies sounded like. Just imagine some rousing marches of the Crusades. I don't know, whatever they sounded like. So he was very concerned. He wanted to preserve the purity of the nusach and the purity of the modes of prayer to make sure that nothing untoward made its way into the davening. So how did he do that? How was he able to codify this? So he traveled a lot. And he traveled a lot, and he listened to Baalei Tefillah from all over Europe. And he was able to hear chazanim from different places and determine which traditions were authentic traditions for each community. It's also important to note that as much as we have a tradition of Nusach HaTfilah, I mentioned that the Amud is not a democracy. The notion that of a shul not having a chazan is of extremely recent vintage. Every shul and every community had a chazan until very recently, comparatively speaking. And in fact, there are sources that indicate that if a community has limited funds and they're able to hire a bad rabbi or a good chazan, then they should choose. Now, this is just, it's probably not a good idea to hire a bad rabbi, but meaning they could hire a rabbi who is an adequate Torah scholar, but they can hire an outstanding chazan. You should hire, of course, you got both, but no, you got neither. But there are many sources that indicate that you should hire the chazan, and in fact, in limited. When there are limited communal funds, many of these sources indicate that the funds should be directed, again, this was before day school tuition, and this was, but the funds should be directed toward a chazan, to making sure there is a chazan for the community. The notion that the Amud was open to lay people was foreign. This is not just because lay people weren't so great at reading Hebrew. This was because the community had to have a shaliach tzibur. The notion of a shaliach tzibur already dates back to Talmudic times. There were
you said in order to read, but the printing press didn't come until many centuries after.
So this is that's true. That's especially why it was important, because the chazan often had committed a lot of the tefillah to memory. But this is even after the printing press. We're talking. This was ubiquitous. It was assumed. Even in communities where we're not known for singing, like the Litvaks in Lithuania, like every community in Lithuania had a chazan. It wasn't just like a thing that everybody could go. Yeah.
So you may go through this, but you're mentioning the first codifier, really, of Nusach. But if you go back, I mean, obviously it's all the Torah, but is there any real true origin of that we believe that this is where the Nusach came from?
So it depends on the tune. Please God, around the high holidays, either I or a friendly Nusach HaTfilah representative from the OU will teach a little bit about the origin of some of the high holiday tunes that are an essential, that are part of the backbone of the high holiday davening. So the Maharil found these authentic traditions, and he called these traditions, he called them Misinai tunes, meaning not that they were actually descended from Har Sinai, but that they had the status, they were immutable. You could not change them at all. We especially find a preponderance of Misinai tunes that you cannot tamper with in any way. These are especially common during the high holidays. So we'll get to it a little bit in more depth, again, please God, around the Yom Nerayim. But examples of Misinai tunes on the Yom Nerayim, or the Baruch Hu, that opens up Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. If somebody got up for the Amud on the first night of Rosh Hashanah and went Baruch Hu Es Hashem, you would stone him. I hope that person deserved. No, but it would be the gong show, right? Because that is an inviolable. You're waiting for that. That is what begins the high holidays experience. Rosh Hashanah begins with that. If somebody decided that they have a better tune for Baruch Hu, then they should never set foot near the Amud ever again, because you cannot. This is a Misinai tune. You cannot change it. The tune for Kol Nidre. If somebody decided that instead of Kol Nidre, the tune for Kol Nidre, they would use a Karl Bach tune for Kol Nidre, what would we do? I hope somebody would start screaming at that person. Normally, I'm against embarrassing people in public, but somebody who does that is asking for it, because that is a mistake. That is an inviolable. I think everybody who heard that would feel violated somehow. Meyer.
I want to ask the question. In my mind, if you think about the Nusach for Rosh Hashanah and Kippur,
right?
It does not sound like an ancient Nusach. It sounds like a European Nusach, and I would presume.
It's an ancient European Nusach.
I would presume that if I went to a Syrian shul, I would not hear Kol Nidre the way we hear it.
That's true. It would be bizarre. If you went to a Syrian shul, you would probably feel very weird because it sounds nothing like what we're used to. And that's what we mentioned a little earlier. We're talking about Ashkenazi davening.
Okay.
Sephardi davening, again, is based on, as we mentioned, a series of makamat, a series of scales and modes that are used at different times. If you went, a friend of mine married a Moroccan girl, purely from from Montreal. And the first year, and the first yontif after their marriage, because that's the way it's done, you go to her family. And her family went to a Moroccan shul. And it was he felt completely bizarre and alien, because the Moroccan davening for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur is, first of all, you could make it through a Shabbos morning davening and it would be interesting. But Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, it's like somebody goes into your living room and rearranges your furniture when you're not there, right? He felt very strange because, apart from the fact that the text is different, there are a lot of things that we say they don't say, but all of these tunes and everything else that he was accustomed to, they don't do. Everything sounds different.
Well,
so
I guess what you're saying is we probably would be hard pressed to find even one melody that everyone in the Jewish world would agree that this is something that we all have in common. I would presume
there are a few things that sound similar. I'll give you another example of a Messinai tune. There's a section in the you have in the Musaf Rosh Hashanah. They're called Kerovos, short paragraphs before Piyutim. The idea of which is that we're really not supposed to say these, but our sages have allowed us to say them, so we say, and we're beseeching God to accept these prayers. One of them, it starts, Ochila Lakel, Ochila Lakel. These are Messinai tunes. If somebody decided that they wanted to use a Karl Bach tune or a Dvekas tune, this is actually happening, Lo Aleinu. People are doing this. If somebody decided that they wanted to do that, in my shul, they would not get asked back to daven again. Meaning, from one day to the next, they wouldn't get asked back to daven. Hinani is a later addition to the Musaf. Even Unasana Tokef is not Misina, because Unasana Tokef is a later addition to the Musaf of Russia. That's a different discussion. So there are approximately 52 throughout. Certainly throughout Yom Noraim, but the rest of the year as well, there are about 52 Messinai melodies that can be identified. Many of these aren't actually melodies, they are motifs. They are musical phrases that are repeated in various contexts. Aleinu, for example. The Nusach for Aleinu is a Messinai motif, but it's also this on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. But it's also the same motif as for the Avos, as it opens up the davening for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. You play it back to yourselves in your head. It's the same idea. Zigoraleinu kechol ha or Elokeinu velokei avosein. It's the same, and you cannot change these tunes. So a lot of this, we have an intuitive sense for Nusach HaTfilah. Even if we don't really know Nusach, we have an intuitive sense for what Nusach is about. And it's not just Rosh Hashanah or Yom Kippur. Every single word in the Siddur has an associated motif with it. You think there is an appropriate motif for Psukei Dezimra during the week. There's an appropriate motif for it from Yishtabach until through Shmona Esrei during the week. Many people don't realize it, but there is one. There is an appropriate motif for Chazaras Hashas every day for Shacharis and Mincha. That's it's by the way the same motif, the same. It's in a pentatonic scale, if you know music. The same as the brachos for the conclusion of the Haftarah. That is the correct motif for Chazaras Hashas during the week. And for Shabbos and Yom Tov davening, there's a motif that you have for Shacharis and Musaf for the Chazaras Hashas. There's a motif that you have for Mincha after Kedusha. These are not necessarily Messinai melodies, but they are motifs that are inviolable. You can't change them because you decide that there's something else that fits better. So the question is, what's the difference then between Nusach HaTfilah and Chazanus, for example? And again, we're talking Ashkenazi Chazan, not Sephardi Chazanut. Not just in terms of pronunciation. No, for real. As I mentioned, Being a Sephardi Chazan is a lot more of leading. You kind of put the key in the ignition and everybody joins in. That's what being a Sephardi Chazan is a lot more about. But what's the difference between Nosach HaTfilah and the Chazanos? To understand this, we need to learn a little bit of history. Shul music. There wasn't really much. There weren't really many compositions written for a synagogue setting. One of the first to do so was a man, an Italian Jew named Salomone Rossi. Right. Wrote beautiful.
Rossi.
Salomone da Rossi. Shlomo min ha'adumim. That's the way that was his name translated in Hebrew. So he wrote choral pieces for the synagogues. If you ever listen to them, you can go home. And there are a lot available on YouTube. You can tell that this was written specifically for a shul. You know what? Hang on. I'll demonstrate. I hope everybody can hear. If you can't, I will.
You'll listen to the recording later.
No, I mean, it's very much in the Renaissance mainstream. I mean,
that's right. Hang on. I'm not guaranteeing that these are actually any good, but okay. Just listen for. I'm not going to subject you to all of it, but. It's not Carl Glass. Okay, everybody here? Anyone here?
Yeah.
They haven't. Nothing's happened yet. Right? This sounds like it's right out of the Renaissance.
Yeah.
It's Renaissance shul, but it was written for, not even Baroque. It's Renaissance music for a shul. It's actually the setting for the Sephardi Kedusha on Shabbos. Keter Yitnu Lecha Hashem Elokeinu Malachim Hamonim. So this was the first, this is really one of the first people who codified music who wrote music for the shul setting. By the end of the 18th century, this became common, and there was a great the cantor, the music director of one of the very first Reform synagogues ever, was a man named Solomon Sulzer. He was the Oberkantor of Vienna, the chief cantor. Actually, in an ironic twist, the synagogue that he was the music director of is now an Orthodox synagogue. It's the Seidenstettengasse Synagogue in Vienna. It's the seat of the chief rabbinate in Austria, in Vienna. It's also, by the way, it's a completely nondescript building. It was built like this so that no one would be able to tell that it's a shul from the outside. Completely blends
sounds
in.
That's pretty reform.
Right.
Well, that's good. It goes with the...
But it wasn't necessarily their choice. I mean, they were allowed to build a synagogue on condition that it didn't look like one. Solomon Sulzer was a well-known figure in Vienna at the time. A number of composers thought very highly of him. Franz Schubert actually wrote a piece for his choir. Beethoven was considering it. At the time, Beethoven was dating a Jewish woman. That didn't work out.
That's why the Kolleder melody is one of his.
That's correct. Beethoven didn't do too well with, despite the fact that his music is transcendent and sublime. He was, generally speaking, an unpleasant human being to be around, and it didn't really work out too well in his interpersonal relationship, including with that Jewish woman. But he knew Solomon Sulzer, and he thought highly of his abilities and was actually considering writing something for him. As we mentioned, at the time, shuls in Europe and everywhere, they had chazanim, they had cantors. But starting in the 19th century, in certain parts of Europe, Jews began to be restricted from cultural life. For example, attending operas. They were barred from participating in cultural events as participants, being featured, and also from attending them. And so Jews needed to get their fill of culture and entertainment elsewhere. And that was transferred from the stage into the synagogue, into the shul. That's when chazanim and choir masters began writing pieces and creating pieces that were operatic in nature while adhering to the correct motifs of nusach. So they were able to showcase their voices and their vocal abilities. It was a win-win, and people wanted to listen. You had a world-class chazanim, and in many ways, chazanim kind of ruined it for themselves. The reason that now there are very few Orthodox shuls left with chazanim, is that people rebelled against what happened, which is that chazanim used to have davening that would go till 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. They would perform, this seems anathema to us, but they would perform, they would daven, and they would really give it their all, and the skills required to be a chazan are often rivaled as being able to hit high C's, being able to to sing for extended periods of time together with the chorus, no musical accompaniment, at least in Orthodox shul, right? That rival those that are necessary for chazanim. Some of the great chazanim were actually thought very highly of by some of the great opera singers. Famously, Yossele Rosenblatt was held in very high esteem by Caruso, and Yossele Rosenblatt gave a concert on the steps of the City Hall, New York City, and Caruso, I believe, attended that concert. So that gave rise to some of these great cantors of the golden age of chazanas. And the golden age of chazanas arose from those very areas where Jews were prohibited from participating in cultural life. In Poland, in Russia, in the Pale of Settlement, White Russia, these were areas where Jews weren't allowed to participate, and so they developed alternate form. You couldn't get a seat. One of the great centers of chazanas was the Plamatska Street Synagogue in Warsaw. You could not get a seat in the chazan until that synagogue was destroyed in the Holocaust. The last chazan in that shul was a chazan named Gershon Sirota. Gershon Sirota was known, it was called a lion, because he roared. He was an unbelievable chazan. And all of his pieces, all of Gershon Sirota's pieces, adhere strictly to Nusach HaTfilah. Yes, they showcase his vocal abilities, but they absolutely were strictly in line with Nusach HaTfilah. You couldn't get a seat on a given Shabbos when Gershon Sirota daven. They had guest chazanim as well. They had a young chazan there named Moshe Kusevitsky, a name that is probably familiar even to people who are not so familiar with chazanas. Moshe Kuzvitsky was the chazan at Bethel and Borough Park, still one of the last holdouts, even today, of chazanas. Ben Tion Miller is the chazan there now. But that was so a piece, any piece of chazanas that you listen to, is supposed to adhere to the basic motifs and the basic idea that the piece is trying to give forward, and a good piece of chazanas helps really bring out the nuances and interpretations of what a given tefillah is about. That's what it is supposed to do. So chazanas and nusach are not the same, but you can't have good chazanas without adhering to nusach hatefillah. So what does it mean what does it take, after we've given all that, what does it take to be a shaliach tzibur? First of all, you have to pronounce the words correctly. That's really the first requirement. You have to learn to pronounce the words correctly before you daven for the amen. And pronouncing the words correctly doesn't just mean pronouncing correctly. It means also dividing the words up accurately as they are in the Siddur. Oftentimes, the tunes that we use wreak havoc with the correct pronunciation and the correct division of word of phrases in a pasuk or in a tefillah. That's very unfortunate, and we have to be mindful of that. And I could, and probably will, go for a while about some of the more egregious examples of this. Some of these examples are unfortunate. Some examples are heretical, or lead people to inadvertently say heretical things, and some of them are just silly. So, or just spring from a lack of knowledge. So you have to pronounce the words properly. If you want to daven Talmud, you need to pronounce the words correctly. Now, this is often easier said than done, or easier said than enforced, but that is certainly in an ideal situation. You should not be davening for Talmud until you know how to pronounce the words properly. That's number one. Number two is the knowledge of and respect for Nusach. And that means not just that the modes are correct, and I'll give you, I know maybe it's a little bit hard to give over, I'll give you examples in a moment. But also that, as Chazen Goffin told me, I sat on the phone with him on Thursday night for about an hour, and he was giving me some of his pearls of wisdom. It says that any good Chazen, any good Baal Tefillah, has to adhere to the 3M rule. The rule number one is that the tefillah, the tune that you select, has to be in the correct mode. A tefillah that requires something in the minor key shouldn't have something in a major key, right? It's not appropriate to use an upbeat prayer, an upbeat tune, for something that is soulful and yearning, where the theme of the tefillah is soulful and yearning. That is, that's actually the mood, right? You have to use a tune that fits the mood of the tefillah. It has to be in the mode as well. It has to be in the minor key or the major key. It has to be the correct mode. And also, if possible, it should also convey the meaning. The tune that you use, if it comes from another, if it's a nigun, for example, from another tefillah, then the nigun from that tefillah should also be used to enhance that tefillah should be, or that pasuk should be connected to the tefillah, to the tune that you use. And finally, the third one that he uses is called Min HaKodesh. So don't be using Christmas carols for davening. That's just not as catchy as they may be. That's just not appropriate. Now, as much as it should go without saying, when it comes to these things, nothing ever goes without saying. So, so yeah.
There are a number of tunes that we use that are actually, for example, the Shunat Eshamayim. It's an old beer song.
It's a Cossack
beer song.
That's true. So I have no doubt that people were marching through the Rhineland slaughtering Jews while singing that too. There's no question in my mind. There is also idea at a certain point whether it should have entered or not. Now that it has entered the vernacular of Nusach, it has become purified. It's become elevated. So that already is okay. But if you were to decide that you wanted to do kedusha on the Shabbos before December 25th, to hark the herald angels sing, that is not right. That's just not cannot worse, right? You just cannot do that. That's
what
not
holy Andrew Lloyd Webber when we're reading about Joseph during
No, I would gong you as well. I would gong you as well. Don't do it, Shelley.
How does Nusach evolve? Why can't you bring in something that's...
Good, because that doesn't mean that every tune is prohibited. It means that, for example, Chassidish Negunim, we use them often. We use Karlbach tunes often in the context of davening. There is nothing wrong with that in principle. The question is, which Karlbach tunes do you use where during davening? That's the question. Is the two, for a prayer like Mimkom Chan, Shabbos morning, you would not or should not use the most upbeat, catchy Karlbach tune. Mimkom Chan is about the yearning for God to appear and reveal himself in his city, Yerushalayim. That's supposed to be in a meditative minor key, and not in like an upbeat, catchy major key. It just doesn't fit. It doesn't fit with the mood. It also doesn't fit with the motif or the mode.
In Kabbalah Shabbat, we have many different
genus. Okay, so people say, what about the Karlbach Kabbalah Shabbos? Karlbach Kabbalah Shabbos is very nice, and people get into it, and it is a travesty of Nusach. Right? It's just, it is, sorry? Okay, that, I'm not about that. I'm not about to stop it because I'm not stupid. But it's important.
We used to have it once a month.
Okay, we could go back, but it's important to recognize that there are several different ways. The truth is that in many ways the Karlbach Kabbalah Shabbos fits with the Nusach. The tunes that are used, that are a standard part of the Karlbach Kabbalah Shabbos, fit with the upbeat nature of the greeting of Shabbos. The problem is that the tunes the way the tunes divide up the psukim completely wreaks havoc with the correct pronunciation and the correct division of phrases in the pasuk. That's one of the main reasons. The other problem is that people think that is the correct. There are people who don't know how to daven Kabbalah Shabbos; they just know how to daven a Karlbach Kabbalah Shabbos, and that is sad. That's just that because there is a correct nusach, and we're going to talk about that. There's a way to daven, and then there's the Karlbach davening. Now Karlbach himself knew nusach. Karlbach was, at the very least, he knew. He was able to find his way around Nusach most of the time. But the people who use Karlbach tunes have no idea about the relationship between the tunes that he composed and Nusach. We talk about the modes, because we've got another a little bit longer. What do we mean when we talk about the modes? There are two modes that we have, especially when it comes to the Shabbos davening. There are several other modes. There are two main modes that come up in the context of the Shabbos davening. Anybody who's a little bit music, I'm sure you know exactly what I'll be talking about. There's two modes. One is called the Phrygian mode, and one is called the Mixolydian mode, or modus. One is the Phrygish mode. Anybody? What's an example of the Phrygish mode? The Nusach for the Chazaras Hashas on Shabbos. That's Phrygish mode. If you want to hear a piece that is entirely in Phrygish mode, everybody familiar with Miserlou? That is Phrygish mode. That is exactly, that scale is pretty much, that is all entirely in Phrygish mode. Another mode that is commonly used, especially in the Shabbos davening, is what's called the Mixolydian mode. That's a major scale, but there's one note that's not exactly correct. So what?
It's like Middle Eastern
sounding. That Phrygish mode is very common in, or Phrygian mode is very common in Gypsy music and Middle Eastern music. Arabic music is very heavily relies on the Phrygian mode. So the Chazaras Hashas after Kedusha, starting with Vador Vador, on Shabbos and Shachris and in Musaf, all that is done in the Phrygish mode. Tikanta Shabbos, Ratzitza, Kavanos Sehas, Tivisa Pirushen Surein Nesachet. That's all the Phrygian mode.
Phrygian is Phrygish.
The same thing. Phrygish is the Yiddish term for the Phrygian mode.
Okay.
The opening, what we call the Avos and the Gevuros, the opening section of the Shemona Esrei on Shabbos, and that is in the Mixolydian mode. It's not exactly a major scale because there is a slight modulation. So it's that Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Abraham. And now, but at certain points, there is that is not exactly strictly a major scale. That is a different scale. It's called the Mixolydian scale. Indian music. You ever go to Madras of blessed memory, and you happen to listen to the soundtrack to the music that they play in the background. The Indian music relies very heavily on the Mixolydian mode. Yes.
So the term you're using, then, you're just referring to something that is predominantly in the major key, but has
slight
pockets of.
That's right. And the truth is that Phrygish as well, the Phrygian mode also can deviate slightly into the major key, even if it is in a more minor key. Phrygish, by the way, I think is derived in Yiddish, it's from the Sprague says to ask. It's like a questioning, yearning type of motif.
If you want to think about modes, is you could just do an octave on the piano, depending upon what key you start on, you want them in a different mode. So there are that many modes.
Right. Now, by the way, for example, the nusach for Chazaras Hashatz, Shacharis and Mincha on a regular weekday, start the Dorvadorna Gilecho, Netzach, Netzach, Ingedush, Aschanach, the Ish, Shichacha, Elokeinu. That's the same nusach as the brachos at the conclusion of the Haftarah. That is based on a pentatonic scale. What's the pentatonic scale? It's the black keys on your keyboard.
Yeah.
You want to hear a perfect pentatonic scale? Listen to
the Pharrell Museum.
Sorry?
The stairs at the Pharrell Museum.
Listen to the song My Girl. It starts off, you know the song My Girl? That is a perfect pentatonic scale that opens up that song. Motown classic, accompanied by the Detroit Symphony, by the way. Many people, the Detroit Symphony did a lot of the orchestral accompaniments for Motown songs. So that is a perfect example. So that is the scale by which the nusach for the Chazaras Hashatz for the weekdays is based. Now, just to give you an example of how Chazonus is based on the correct nusach, I'm going to play for you a snippet of a piece by Yosela Rosenblatt. A piece that, by the way, my violin teacher described as one of the greatest musical pieces that he had ever encountered. It is Yosela Rosenblatt's setting for Tikanta Shabbos. One second. Here we go. Again, you may not be able to hear it all that well, but you're going to see how a piece of Chazanus actually is based entirely on the correct, we've talked about what the correct mode is. Now we'll see how Chazanus takes it and just takes it to another step. One second. Of course, there are many settings of Tikanta Shabbos. Many Chazanim did their own settings. This happens to be the one I know best and my favorite. One second. Excellent violin playing too, by the way. We don't repeat words of silence. I would let Yosla Rosenblatt repeat words. I could listen to this all day, but you get the idea, and I would recommend, by the way, that you actually listen to this, because if nothing else, I'll get perhaps instill a little bit of an appreciation for Chazanus in the context of it. You notice how he adheres strictly to the mode, the correct mode of the davening, even while he was embellishing it quite a bit, you were getting a sense as well of what the Tikanta Shabbos, you have instituted Shabbos, you have desired the sacrifices, and the idea he's setting up is through his interpretation of the davening, he's setting up the notion of this is the introduction to the korbanos of Shabbos. This is what, that's what Chazanus is, its introduction, yeah.
Is there a So basically, you can make up your own melodies as long as it's in the mode. Is that what I'm understanding?
If you have the talent to make up melodies for davening, as long as you're not doing it instead of one of the Mishnah tunes, for example, and
okay.
as long as it fits the mode of the davening and the mood of the davening, if you are blessed to have that kind of abilities, then absolutely, why not?
Okay.
We had already. He's been here twice already. The Majitzer Rebbe has been here twice. The Majitzer Rebbe writes 10 new tunes for every year before Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, for different parts of davening. That's a lot of pressure, I know. But and he writes, by the way, so many that sometimes he forgets some of the ones that he wrote many years ago. But he writes 10 new tunes. If you have, and he knows, and I know that he knows, because I actually have discussed it with him. He knows about the different modes of davening, different moods and motifs of the davening. And he's able to write, so if you have that ability, then God bless you, absolutely. But you have to make sure that you're sensitive to this. So this is an overview of Nosach HaTfilah. As we go forward, we're going to apply these principles to actual davening. You have to start with kind of the basics. It's important before we have to before we leap, we have to learn to run. So we're going to start with some of the less glamorous davenings. You're not going to start right away with Musaf on Shabbos. We're going to start with some of the more basic Shachris during the week. We're going to start with that, and that will act. And there is a reason for that as well. Some of those motifs actually are related to some of the other ones, but also because they have a principle in Halacha: Tadir v'she'eno Tadir Kodem. That which is more common always takes precedence. So we daven every single morning. This is true whether you daven with a minyan, though you should, or whether you happen to be davening b'yechidos. Nosach is for everybody. If you're davening to yourself, you should still adhere. Your own personal davening should adhere to the nosach. So that's what we're going to talk about. That's what we're going to talk about next time. If you have any questions, please, one moment. I'm going to be putting up, I'm not immediately, but some of my, because I have to make the recordings first, my own recordings. But in the meantime, I would urge you to go to Rabbi Lookstein's website. It's actually hosted by Ramaz, but if you Google Rabbi Lookstein Nosach, you will find pretty much a lot of what you need to know and a lot of what I would want you to know. Please tell your friends as well. The idea of this is to raise our personal davening, but it's also to elevate the standards of our communal davening. Make sure that our davening adheres to the very highest standards of nosach and of tradition. Make sure that we are part of that as well. Sima.
I grew up in an Orthodox shul with a true chazan, and my question really is, when you have a shalit kippur today, which may be different than actually are different, do you feel that the purpose is to sing the nusach such that people are listening to it, or to actively involve the congregation as participants?
Absolutely, to involve and to elevate the congregation, right? It shouldn't nowadays. A davening shouldn't be a performance. There should be some. Now there are places where you'll go to daven and it is a performance. It is an experience, right? Some people find it elevating because there are people that respond well to grandeur. And I worked for 4 years in a shul that has a full-time chazan and where I wore a morning suit every Shabbat. There is, I believe, a place for that. I believe that we lose something when we become completely informal like this. But a shaliach tzibur the job of a shaliach tzibur is to inspire the tzibur, but that should never be at the expense of all of the other things that we mentioned. You should be using the traditional modes and motifs and the mood of tefillah to inspire the tzibur and to get the tzibur to elevate their tefillah experience. That certainly is that's what a good chazan should do. If that inspiration comes because people are going through a more decorous, high church-like atmosphere, then that's what that shul should. But if it's not, then at the very least, it should be in the other way. Yeah.
You think we should hire a chazan?
Let me put it to you this way, and I have no problem. If we had the money, and the congregation was could be swayed, I don't think I don't think it's a bad thing. Again, that if we had the money is a big if. But I don't think that it is many people feel that a chazan is a waste of communal funds. I believe that a misora of 1,000 years tells us otherwise. So I'm not ashamed to say I don't think that it's something that we should think is completely ridiculous. Obviously, it may not be feasible, but it's not something that in principle is completely ridiculous. Yeah?
So the subject of Nusach is 90% musical and will be in this course mainly musical versus diction of words. And
no, that is not correct. First and foremost, you need to learn how to pronounce the words correctly. If you don't know how to pronounce the words, then you don't even get to the stage where we talk about Nusach.
But these differences.
And again,
like
and also
choosing. I mean, like
right. We're going to explain why. In other words, we talk about how this phrase has to be pronounced this way. We'll explain why it is like that.
Right.
It's not just going to be, this is the way it should be because I said so. It's going to be we have to understand what the meaning of the tefillah is, what the meaning of the words are, and why. Why the nusach fits in this way, and why this is the nusach that fits in each particular one. The next class, this was initially advertised as a monthly class, wasn't it? At least the sign.
It says monthly.
I am going to be away. Out of the next 5 Mondays, I'll be away for 2 of them. So. If you want to meet more regularly than monthly, we can. Let's meet next Monday. We'll meet next Monday, and then we'll go on a hiatus for a little, let's say 2-3 weeks. We'll pick up. In August, probably at the end of August.
After Tishbe.
After Tisha B'Av. And then again, there will be a component of this class in which we actually analyze the Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur davening, and we'll gain a better sense of the tefillah through the nusach ha-tefillah of the Yom Narayim.
Can you take the classes?
I am taking this one. So thank you for coming. And looking forward to this journey together with you. Yes, you can pass it back.